This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
So, I am joined this morning by Dr. Tony Irving, who has come to us all the way from Washington State to talk about his research on meteorites. So, first of all, very warm welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, as I understand it, you initially trained as a terrestrial geologist, is that correct?
That's correct.
The obvious follow-up question to that would be, what persuaded you to turn your eyes to the sky and start looking at meteorites instead?
Well, I'm a geologist and not an astronomer, but I understand astronomers also have an interest in the solar system, and that includes Earth and the inner planets and asteroids and so forth. I met some meteorite collectors in 2001, and that has led to a lot of other people that I've met who are collectors and scientists who want to work on meteorite samples as pieces of the solar system. So it's been an ongoing and growing interest.
One misconception I suppose we should address at the start of this interview before we go any further. What's the difference between a meteor and a meteorite?
Right. A lot of people are confused by that. It's all because of the Greek root for this word meteor, which is also, of course, used in meteorology, which is about weather, not space. And the root meteor refers to any sort of celestial or sky phenomenon. To the Greeks, everything including lightning and rainbows and all of these sorts of things were variations of meteors, phenomena in the sky. In modern terms, a meteor is, in fact, the light that we see when something falls through the atmosphere or occasionally is seen in the upper atmosphere in meteor showers, but that's not to do with meteorites. So a meteorite is the rock that you find, or metal plus rocky material that you find on the ground, which represents the ground version of something that comes in from somewhere else as a meteoroid, and when it goes through the atmosphere, the friction with the atmosphere produces heating and ionized gas, and the light is what is called the meteor. So we can see a meteor, but it's not an object.
So you're interested in studying the fragments that actually make it down to us on the surface?
That's correct. Even though most fall in the ocean.
So it's probably a fair assumption to say that these things fall on the Earth pretty uniformly.
They do.
But as you've already said, about two-thirds of our planet is covered by ocean. So how do we go about finding these things once they land? Are there best places to look?
Well, unfortunately, England is not the best place to look because it's covered in green stuff. And also, most of Western Washington, where I live in Seattle, is not the greatest place. So the desert regions, the barren desert regions of the Earth, are the places where most meteorites will be apparent. Even though they occur everywhere, we won't find them easily, except in very barren places without vegetation. In addition, we need people to be searching, and although some people think you may be able to find meteorites with certain types of metal detectors or something like that, unfortunately the majority of meteorites aren't that magnetic. What we need are eyes on the ground and time. But in a barren, pale-colored landscape like those in Northwest Africa or in Oman or in Antarctica, except we don't go there all year, those are the landscapes that darker meteoritic stones are likely to stand out. And that's where they have been found in larger numbers.
So these would have been found by dedicated scientific expeditions out to these sites?
To Antarctica, there are expeditions from many governments each austral summer for a couple of months. And in other countries, there are private expeditions. But there are also indigenous or nomadic groups, mostly in Africa, that are there all the time looking for things that might be worth money.
And so those then presumably find their way into the hands of scientists?
Yes, via collectors in many countries that are interested in having a piece of an extraterrestrial specimen. And fortunately, many of those collectors are also armchair scientists. So the interaction between those collectors and research scientists is really a very good collaboration.
You mentioned earlier that a lot of these objects weren't that magnetic.
Right.
So can you maybe talk a bit about what they're composed of, how they're made up?
Well, some meteorites are very metal-rich, but those are rare. And yet, except for Martian meteorites, all other meteorites pretty much contain specks of metallic iron. It turns out that Earth rocks and Martian rocks are really unusual in comparison to other samples that we get because they do not contain metal. Rather, they're more oxidized and they contain iron oxides instead of iron metal. So most parts of the solar system that we know about that are solid are actually not as oxidized as our Earth rocks and Martian rocks. There is slight magnetism from a mineral called magnetite, but it's not present in very large amounts. So you would need a very high precision or sensitive magnetic detector to detect Martian meteorites that way. So that's not how they're found. They're found by painstaking, searching, eyes on the ground.
Is it possible to use techniques like you've just described to distinguish a Martian rock from an Earth rock? Are there certain things that we can look for?
That's not the best way. The best way is detailed analysis because it turns out that Martian rocks and lunar rocks and terrestrial rocks are broadly composed of the same sorts of minerals, but those minerals have different chemical compositions in detail. So this is fortunate, so we have a quick way of testing whether something might be from one or other of those places because of detailed differences in certain ratios in some of the more common minerals that are easily analyzed. Minerals like olivine and pyroxene and plagioclase, which are present on all of those bodies. So luckily, in detail, those minerals have different compositions and we can sort those specimens according to some knowledge that we have about, you know, what their compositions ought to be.
And so how many of these specimens have we found at the moment? How many do we know of?
Well, most meteorites aren't from the Moon and Mars. Most meteorites are from various parts of the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. But my particular interest is in what we might call planetary meteorites, lunar meteorites, and Martian meteorites. And currently, there are about 150 distinct lunar meteorites and about 120 distinct Martian meteorites. But there are many, many more of certain types of meteorites from the asteroid belt that broadly would be the most abundant types are called chondrites. So if you went out in the desert and found an extraterrestrial specimen, more than likely it's going to be a chondrite. To find any lunar or Martian specimen is extremely unlikely, very rare occurrence.
Just looking around the tables that we have here, we're actually conducting this interview in the Petrology Lab, we have a lot of different asteroid samples that have all been cut into very thin slices. And I was just wondering, why is that done? Does that help us study these objects?
Just like in standard terrestrial petrology, the study of rocks, when you have a rock sample that looks opaque to you in a large piece, if you cut a very thin slice, about 30 microns thick, most of the minerals become transparent. And that's how we can examine them. And likewise, most extraterrestrial solid samples, we can study the same way. And the microscopes that are around here are our first step in examining them. But these are also, although they're transparent, they're also polished. And the minerals are chemically analyzed using different sorts of equipment. But we can take these little 2 by 1 inch thin sections, as we call them, and put them in an electron microprobe analyzer and measure the composition of the minerals. So it's a combined approach. We start with optical examination and then we do these more detailed types of testing.
Your specialist area of interest is Martian meteorites.
It is.
And so putting these samples under the microscopes and electron microprobes, what can they tell us about Mars? Can they give us an insight as to what it was like in the past?
Well, there's no age information obtained that way. If you want to go to the past, you have to use radioactive isotopes of various sorts to measure time, just as we do on Earth, with developing the chronology of various events using various isotope systems that involve radioactive decay and half-lives that we know. And that is not done with these sorts of specimens, but with small solid pieces from the meteorites themselves that are studied by specialists in those particular fields. We can tell a lot, though, about the mineral compositions. We can't even tell that these rocks are from Mars in any of those ways. We need some other techniques to do that.
Well, you mentioned in your lecture yesterday that you gave that there would be fragments of atmosphere trapped in these bodies. Could you maybe elaborate a little more on that?
Right. Most of the smaller objects in the solar system do not have any, well, they're not big enough to retain any sort of gaseous atmosphere around them. Now, it turns out that Mars does have a thin atmosphere, and we know the composition of the gases it's a different sort of air on Mars compared to the Earth. On the Earth, it's mostly nitrogen with some oxygen and a small amount of other gases. On Mars, it's mostly carbon dioxide. So in detail, the gas composition, the gases that make up the Mars atmosphere are very different from our atmosphere. The Moon has no atmosphere. So a Martian rock, when it is ejected by a small asteroid impact, actually has the ability to encapsulate some of the Martian air inside it. And remarkably, we can make that trapped gas escape and measure its composition in the lab. And it turns out that that gas that's released from these meteorites matches the measured atmosphere of Mars that has been determined by landing and measuring right there on the Martian surface. So we don't have a rock from Mars yet, but we have rocks that contain trapped Martian air.
And so that would then suggest that the Martian atmosphere is pretty much the same now as it was in the past, because those two samples agree with each other?
We don't know that for sure. What we know is that at the time that the Martian meteorites were ejected from Mars, which only goes back to 20 million years ago, that we have a match for those that have been measured between the modern atmosphere of Mars and the trapped gases in those samples. If we want to go back further than that, we don't have the sample. The samples that would have been ejected from Mars in the past before that have long since been captured by other bodies. We don't have any that are older than 20 million years ago or have not been ejected earlier than 20 million years ago. So, that's what we know.
Have there been any samples recovered from the innermost rocky planets, Mercury and Venus?
Venus is very unlikely, at least today, because we don't have large numbers of objects, fortunately, running around, because they might strike the Earth and cause damage and stuff. Earlier in solar system history, there were large objects. We can see cratering on the Moon and other places and the effects of that bombardment, but those have long since landed somewhere. So to eject something from even the Earth or Venus today, you would have to have a very, very rapid, large object. And in addition, Venus has a very thick atmosphere. So we don't really expect that we would have any samples that would represent pieces from Venus. The only possibility would be if Venus was struck long, long ago and some fragments of that collision were now among the many things in the asteroid belt. We then recently would have sampled some of that by other collisions. But right now, there's no meteorite that we have or that we know about that is plausibly related to Venus as far as we can guess. We do, on the other hand, have at least two that may, be related to Mercury. Dynamical calculations show that it's possible that pieces from Mercury could be ejected and arrive and land on Earth, although many would go into the Sun. Some may have landed on Earth, at least they would have escaped Mercury, which also does not have an atmosphere. The problem there is that, unlike Mars, we wouldn't have any trapped gases to try and connect to the Mercury situation because there's no atmosphere to compare with. So until we get an actual rock sample returned from Mercury, we won't know whether these two rare rocks are really from there or from some other place that's somewhat like it, possibly long destroyed.
Well, you mentioned getting rock samples from other bodies, and that's clearly important to compare to the ones that make it down to us.
Yes.
So, going to the Moon briefly, how do the lunar meteorites that we found compare to the lunar samples that were brought back by the Apollo missions?
Apollo and the Russian Luna, L-U-N-A, missions. Don't forget those. And now new probable sample return by Chinese missions in the near future. And some private missions are in the works as well, I should point out. The Apollo samples are pretty important, and that gives us a very good ground truth, so to speak, to compare the lunar meteorites generally with samples that we actually collected and brought back from the Moon. On the other hand, the landed missions are only for specific places, whereas the meteorites must have been ejected from many different places on the Moon, on the backside, but we don't know where. So we have more samples, more coverage, but we don't have any address for where they came from.
So we can't trace their specific locations just yet?
No. Nor can we do that for Mars. So although the meteorites in both cases are very important samples, there still is great value in going and either doing orbital missions or even maybe landing missions, whether with people or with rovers, to add to this knowledge base.
Well, Mars is still a target of increasing study for rovers and such. We've got Curiosity roving around at the moment. We've got the ExoMars rover, which is going to be coming up at some point in the next decade. Do you anticipate those being useful for your field?
Oh, everything is useful. Although I think having an actual solid sample is the most useful thing because in contrast to a remote laboratory or rover situation, we can apply all of the detailed testing that we can do in a lab on Earth if we actually have a sample of any size. And whereas if you have a remote mission, you have to plan in advance what you can do and how you're going to handle the sample. And also there are things that you cannot do, at least currently, on a remote mission. You can't measure the age of the rock, for example, very well. In contrast, a sample brought back to Earth can be dated very, very accurately.
So, I'm guessing that would be your dream Martian mission then, to bring a piece back.
Of course. Any samples are going to be very important. I hope that there will be a return mission. Now, whether those samples will match the Martian meteorites that we have now remains to be seen. It wouldn't be too surprising if there's a variety of rocks on Mars, but short of Mars geologists going up there and doing what we've done on the Earth, I think eventually that will happen, but it might be a while.
Yeah, but it looks like there's still a lot more to be done.
Well, and in the meantime, the number of Martian meteorites continued to grow. It wasn't that long ago that we only had half the number, and I expect that there'll be more, you know, we seem to be getting 4 or 5 per year, mostly from Northwest African countries.
That's quite a few, actually. That's more than I was expecting.
It's more than most people expect, so I'm not complaining.
Certainly not. Well, I'm conscious of the fact that you have a morning microscope session to prepare for. Okay, so Tony, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot.